The Jack Woods Quartet, featuring Roy Ayers with a little number called Ramblin', is the title track of Wilson's 1966 album. Wilson, of course, is on piano, Ayers on vibes, Monk Montgomery on bass, and Varner Balow on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead, and I'm climbing out of my flu slash cold. Or is it cold slash flu? Well, we have some very interesting weather forecasts lately here. The forecast is beware iguanas falling out of the trees. This is a thing that has been happening for several years now. When it gets cold, it's very cold here. It's in the 40s. And when it gets this cold, the iguanas who go up into the trees at the end of the day, this is where they sleep, they get caught by the cold and they freeze. And when they freeze, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily dead. It's just that everything shuts down and they start falling out of the trees. So the weatherman was advising people. It's a very interesting weather forecast. Cloudy with a chance of iguanas. They just fall out of the trees and you have to be careful not to be in their path. But the hope is that this is as cold as it's going to get for them. If it gets any colder, then it would be very dangerous and life-threatening for iguanas. And some people don't mind that this happens because they say the iguanas are an invasive species and all of that. But and they are quite large when they grow into adulthood. But I like iguanas. Since I was in Trinidad as a little girl, I've loved iguanas. So, but that's our weather forecast for today. Cloudy with a chance of iguanas. Well, what have we to talk about today? Certainly the... one more note before we go on to the issues of the day. I want to thank those of you who encouraged me to get better faster. Thank you very much for your calls and your concerns. Thank you so much. It means a lot that people extend their good thoughts when you're not doing very well. So thank you for that. Well, now on to our subject. I had a long talk with a friend. It's a kind of serial conversation we've been having for years, literally years. We talk politics all the time, and it's never a short conversation. But I had one of those yesterday, and it went pretty much the same way so many of our conversations go. We were commenting on what we were seeing being broadcast as a historic event on television, the trial of Donald Trump, the President of the United States, by the Senate, the House having already determined that he should stand trial for two charges. One was obstructing Congress, and one was for abuse of power. So there was a lot of dilly-dallying and so forth, but finally it has reached the Senate, and the trial has begun. And I can't help but say, people from other countries watching this must be bewildered that this is what passes for jurisprudence in the United States. And, you know, this is at the highest level, supposedly, because the president is being tried. And we have all these silly things happening in the course of this trial. And it only leaves you to wonder. It's an amazement, actually, that despite this, what we see as leadership in the United States, the country still continues to operate despite this. It proves to me, and this is what I communicated to my friend yesterday, this was my position, it proves how long ago, really, we lost the ability to trust a political or electoral system that gives us this to work with. The president is an abysmal leader, as are many members of Congress. I have no idea why they're still there. Force of habit, maybe? But there's no rational reason that this is what we have as the highest level of governance in our country. We long passed the point when we should have had this political and electoral system overhauled and something better put in that operates more in tune with what we say the relationship between government and the governed should be. We don't have access to the throttle and brake of government, not in this country. And we see it playing out in shocking reality on television. It's actually reality television. I can't believe that this is what we are made and compelled to accept. People pretending that what they're doing is, well, their duty. They're elected. They have special privileges to charge a president and to hear his defense and all of that kind of stuff, and then decide whether he is to be acquitted or convicted of the charges. It is so depressing. I can't watch much of it. Very depressing. So we'll talk today about the obvious question that this whole charade raises, which is this political and electoral system still viable, considering our needs and considering that this society has evolved far beyond what our leaders and representatives believe? They still have us like children. We don't know what we want. So they give us what they think we want. We have no input. We have no real representation. We have a crime literally unfolding in Congress right now, in the U.S. Senate of all places. It's a crime. it's a concocted event. I have never heard of a scenario anywhere in the world where first you go to trial, and if we feel like it, we'll rustle up some evidence later. As my friend would say, that's bass-ackwards. But it is presented to us as the epitome of legal minds duking it out in the interest of democracy and truth and justice and all that other crap that they talk about. My feeling more and more as I watch this or hear discussions about it is that we have to draw a line somewhere. We the people. We are not supposed to tolerate this beyond this point. We're not supposed to tolerate even this. We have to draw a line. We have to decide whether this is in fact a democratic proposition that the government and the people work together to forge a nation operating under agreed rules. That's not what's happening in Washington. It's a disgrace. And here are all these people agreeing that this is the path they will follow, at least until this so-called trial ends. And we know how it will end. All this pretense, all this effort to distract, to lie, to deceive, all for the purpose of maintaining one person in power who has been pre-selected to run and win again and rule again, which means that this tainted system, there is no reason to hope for change for at least another 4 years. We're in very bad shape. And I don't know how it has become acceptable for this to be enacted in front of our eyes. And still, we're told, well, this is democracy in practice. I don't understand how they could claim that. It seems to me that there must be some changes immediately. This is not a democratic process at all. It is not even intelligent. But they've gotten away with it. This president has put everybody at his service, and he does what he wants. And then they come behind him, they walk behind him with their collection devices to pick up the poop. And still tell us, this went just as planned, it is a democratic process, remember that. But I think we ought to examine, and quickly, we ought to get to some point of view, collectively, as to whether this is satisfactory, whether this flies as leadership that we can be confident in, leadership that is competent to govern. Because when you look at it, all parts of our society are in turmoil, in distress, or in meltdown. The only part of this governmental process that is working is that part that concerns those who govern. They're doing quite well. You would never think there is a crisis with homelessness. You would never think there is a crisis in education. You'd never think there's a crisis with unemployment. Indeed, the president insists, and people are parroting his lies, that things couldn't be better. If you're out of a job, the inference is it's your own fault. Because the economy is humming. And now comes this business of electoral politics, and we see even more obscenities there. And still they're pretending that, well, this is the same system that we've had for so many years. It's worked for so many years, no need to change it. And in any event, we have the best electoral system in the world. So what are you griping about? But people have no influence over government anymore. Government is a government despite the people, or to spite the people. That's what it has become. Somehow we have got to find a way to begin to make changes, not in government, because that's an impossible task to accomplish within a short time. The changes we have to make are with ourselves. We must make these changes, or begin to make these changes, immediately. We should support no party that doesn't get the job done, that doesn't support us. No party. Don't even think about it. Oh, well, my mother was a Democrat, my father was a Democrat, my grandpa was a Democrat, therefore, I too am a Democrat. That is not logic at all. We should have some standards about our expectations of a party, what it's supposed to do, what we are supposed to feel it doing in our behalf. And we ought to put a stop to this practice that we have had for so many years now, which is unconscious voting. It is one thing to say, I'm not voting. This was my position 20 years ago or so. I said, I'm not going to tolerate this. This is not my idea of a democratic process. This is not working. And I don't want to contribute to something that isn't working, intentionally not working. And I said, well, until I find a compelling reason that I should vote, I need to have a compelling reason to vote. I haven't found one. There hasn't been one in 20 years, at least by my standards. So I opt out of voting. I can't wait to vote. Yet I have had to wait because I refuse to support a system that ultimately is deceptive and deceitful, that lies and that really doesn't benefit the people. All promises are not necessarily promises. We have people out in the street, sleeping in the streets, sleeping in their cars, or entire families. We have unemployment, massive unemployment, but Trump doesn't see it. Legislators don't see a need to declare a state of emergency about these things. These are basic human rights being violated in front of our faces. We say nothing. We get out perhaps in March. That is not changing anything. We have to get brutal about our interests and compel this system to understand why it's there, what it's supposed to do. I don't see how anybody could go another day seeing the dichotomy between the people who do not have and the people who do have and find it acceptable and then train themselves not to see it. You're practically walking over people on the sidewalk, and there is no collective outrage about it in a land that boasts how great it is. Children starving. And still, the education system denies them a meal. They had to follow procedures, you know. How do you sleep at night? How did we get to this point where we have joined this government and governmental system in their brutality? And we don't have any particular feeling about it. The elderly people have to decide medicine or rent. And sometimes they can't afford either or. The education system. Look at the schools where children sit all day, supposedly to learn. I wouldn't want to put, in some schools that I have seen, I wouldn't want to put a living thing, let a living child in there to pretend that you're going there to get an education. It's impossible to get an education in these environments. They're unsuitable. They should be condemned and something else replacing them. I think we have to get serious, or I'll say it bluntly, we will have no reason. I'm at that point now. We have no reason to complain. We have no right to complain. We have no cause to complain because we've tolerated this for decades. We talk about the things that they're doing wrong to us, how they're making us suffer. Okay, great. Get it? I got it. Now what? What are you going to do about it? What is your part and my part in all of this? Why are we pointing the finger outward, pointing at somebody else, when it is so clear that you got to turn that finger around and point it at yourself? We are doing very little, close to nothing, compared to the crisis that we're in. To have any effect at all, the changing the direction of this country. And really, we're not here to change the country. Let's be clear about that. We are right now in the moment, we have to fight for ourselves. Because in any event, that's where change starts. We have to fight for our communities. We have to fight for our elderly. We have to fight for those who are incarcerated, those who are unemployed, those who lack critical medical care. We have to take on the fight. We have to fight for good daycare services so that parents can work. We have to fight for decent jobs that actually pay a living wage. This is 2020. And when you compare the United States for all the expertise and all the good things it supposedly is and supposedly does, you compare it with most any other country, you see how far behind we are in so many critical categories. We cannot entrust our fate to politicians and to a system in Washington, or maybe even at the state level or the city level or the county level. We can't do it. They have all had the benefit of time and the benefit of doubt. And now we should resolve that they're out of time and there's no doubt. We are clear about what they have been doing all these years and continue to do, and see no reason to change anything because the formula they came up with is working so well. And when you think about it, it is downright insane to beg people to do the very thing they do not want to do, which is to administer to the people in the sense that they understand what good governance is. There's no hope that they will change. I'm telling you, you have to come to the same conclusion when you think about it. There is no reason to believe that there would be substantive and substantial change anytime soon. It's not going to happen. We'll all be dead before that happens, if it happens at all. And still, we report for duty on election day, we go and we vote. And why are we voting? Because this is democracy. We have to change our attitudes. We have to see how silly, literally silly and insane we have been all these years. We keep getting the same result, and yet we do the same thing over and over and over again. We have become very predictable. We service our own exploitation, our own bad treatment by government. We service it. We give it life. We elect people to ignore us. We pay taxes we won't ever see a just return on, for ourselves, for our communities, for our children. We're crazy. And we won't admit it. And we won't do anything about it. My goodness, what more do we need? How much more evidence do we need that this is, in fact, the plan? This is how we are to be destroyed. It may look like an election. It may look like you get to join a union and your pay goes up 10%, but it's planned obsolescence. When you see how it unfolds. So we need to give ourselves notice to ourselves that you're done with A, B, C, D. You're done with those four things. You're not participating, but you're formulating your own system that would help you much better than the one that is there now. We have to do something drastic, because you see, we're tempted to believe, well, they wouldn't go that far. Yes, they will. And with your help, they'll go that far. We have to get serious, people. It's long overdue. This is not a system for most of us. This system would not help most of us. Even though you invest in it through your labor, through your taxes, through all kinds of ways you support a system, it does not support you. You have a police force to protect you. Does it? Does it? Looking at the figures, just go to any legislator and say, look at these figures. False arrests, killings by police, horrible trials that are basically crooked trials, major time. You do not get to serve the same time as anybody else. You get more time to serve. If you're black or brown in this country, you have penalties to pay. To live every day, you have to pay penalties. Penalties are due, and you understand it, but here's the thing that confuses me. You pay it. You cooperate with it. You let this system have its way with you. No protest. You just go along while you mutter something about, well, this is bad, I don't like this. You're muttering to yourself. We haven't faced this system down. Really, we haven't. We wait till somebody gets shot in the head by a cop. We wait till there are indisputable instances of police brutality. We wait till there is no solution. There's no way of getting out of the situation without forfeiting your life. That's what we do. I am pleading for us to come to a whole new understanding about our collective reality. And it is not being served by this process, by this legislature, by that judge, by any official. They're taking care of their business. We are not taking care of ours. We just are not. So, those are the thoughts that I exchanged with my friend. And he put up a fight to some degree. He said, well, you know, people have to go through a period of reacclimation. I said, enough of that. We have had enough excuses for why we are not doing what we're supposed to do. We're done with that. We have an agenda, and it's more urgent than most people's agendas. But we're not concerned about most people's agendas. This is time to get very focused on what we have to do literally to survive, let alone thrive. This is no joke. I go back to this point I made earlier. Some of my friends basically derided me because they know I've been very politically inclined, politically involved, politically motivated, and so forth, socially involved, community focused. Well, how could you blame a system? I said, what? You're right. I had to agree. Can't blame the system. The system is designed, meticulously and scientifically designed to do whatever it is it does. In whatever way it does it. That's why they call it a system. You don't have to think when you're in that system. You don't have to formulate appropriate responses to specific problems. You don't have to do all of that. Like this trial that's going on now in Washington, nobody there is thinking. You have the best minds of the country, all the leaders of this country, and they can't get past base one. How the hell do you have a trial and agree to have a trial and you're participating in having a trial, but you agree not to call witnesses? Somebody is eating some very funny food. How do you explain that? And you supposedly have a brain, and you supposedly represent a district, a congressional or senatorial district at that. How do you rationalize these two things as belonging together? That you're smart, you're capable, you've been elected by X number of people to represent them, and you sit right in the seat of power, and you can't bring yourself to voice an opinion and then act on it based on total denial of yours and the rights of all the people in your district, their constitutional rights to fair representation. Something is wrong. And that's because we've let these injustices go on uncontested. We are tourists in our own experience. That's crazy to me. But I want to know what you think. After this break at 888-874-4888. Tell me how crazy I am. Right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and you can express yourselves. Call in. Let's hear what you're thinking at 888-874-4888. David from Brooklyn, you start us off today.
Yes, good afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello.
I guess in some respects I'm going to be redundant because people throw around the term democracy all the time, but we don't have a democracy. This country was never invented, so to speak, with the Constitution to be a democracy. What we have is a quasi-democracy, not real democracy, because the United States of America is run by a small capitalist ruling class. They run the country. And when I say quasi-democracy, I'm talking about the technique they use is to have these two groups, the Republicans and the Democrats, who are both capitalist ruling class groups who are controlled and run by the ruling class totally. They decide who is going to run for the highest office. And most of the people in the legislative branch and all the other branches are beholding to them, the people in Congress and so forth. So, you know, this idea of democracy, which is thrown around quite often, is not true. It's a quasi-democracy. It's run by a small capitalist ruling class. Now, I think people ought to understand that the ruling class that runs the country has to have three things in place. And I will go over those three things. First of all, to run a country like this with those millions of people and by a class of people that represents essentially maybe 1% or more or less, you have to keep people ignorant. So the idea of having good education is a no-no. You don't want to educate people. You want to train them. You want to train them to go along with the status quo. That's different than education. When I was in the military, I was trained to kill people. That's what I was trained to do. They didn't educate me. They trained me. And that's what is done for the mass of people in this country. When you go to school, you learn some skills that are going to be useful to the people that run the country. But in terms of educating you, that's the last thing they want to do. Because when you're educated, you have the facility to evaluate things and look for things that need to be looked at and make good decisions in your interests. You wouldn't set up a society where, as you say, all these homeless people are here, people in poverty, maybe half the population, more or less, where just a few people have all the money, where people like Bezos and Gates and another one, have as much money as Warren Buffett, that is, as half the people in the country. So this is not a democracy. Why would people in a democracy put themselves in this position. This is not a democracy. People are trained to go along with a system that does not benefit them. And what do you do about that? Well, what the ruling class does is, if the people act up a little, they throw out some bones, like the Social Security system during the 30s. And they can do that now and then to calm people down. But anyone who is in a position like the ruling class of this country, who has total control over the minds of most of the people, they will do what is necessary to maintain control, and they do it by three things. Number one is keeping people ignorant, even though they tell you they're going to educate you, which is a lie, which is different than train. And number two, their main tool in their tool bag is divide and conquer. And we see that in this concept of white supremacy racism, with dividing people up by ethnicity, by sex, by age. And any way you can divide people up, you can weaken the masses of people. And that's what's going on here. So that's the second one. And the third one is to maintain control of physical force. That's slave patrol at one time, the police department, the military, National Guard, the reserve, the regular military. So you have all levels of control. Number one is keeping people ignorant about what's really going on. Number two is divide and conquer. And number three would be military control. So the only way that people are going to change that is a rebellion. People in power don't voluntarily give up, you know, and say, oh, yeah, well, you can have it. You have it your way, and you won't be in poverty. Well, you can just run it yourself. But they're not going to do that. So people are in a bad position there, and most people don't understand the game. They don't know the game. This is
absolutely
a giant game run by the ruling class, for the ruling class, by the ruling class.
Well, thank you for getting us started today. And on a good series of points, I hope people pick up and elaborate on your points. But thank you so much, David, for calling in. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon, Therese. How are you doing?
Okay, Ed, how are you?
Like I tell you, hanging on by my thumbs. Hanging on by my thumbs. Trying to make it one day at a time.
Every time I picture that expression, it makes me laugh because it's a bizarre picture. Hanging in by your thumbs.
It's a bizarre world we live in. Like the Chinese proverb, may you live in interesting times. I mean, I hear what David's saying, and I've heard other people say this over and over again. But it reaches a point. Changes in Americans, we all know, I mean, as far as most people that I deal with, and because they've taught me, we all know that the democracy in America was never a true democracy. At best, it was a republic. At worst, it was an oligarchy. It was started by a minority segment of the population who didn't want to pay taxes, because the majority of American people had no problem with paying taxes. And if you read Howard Zinn, if you read other writers who I can't call to mind right now, there were several revolutions in America. There were nonviolent revolutions in Pennsylvania, in certain parts of Maryland, in certain parts of Delaware, where the colonials just said, "Listen, we're not going to give you any. We're not going to give you any more of our crops, of our profits." And the dragon was back down because they lived with each other. The fundamental thing is this. Martin Luther King said it. His birthday just passed. Mahatma K. Gandhi said it. Other leaders have said it. The Buddha has said it. And it's not being esoteric. Golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If you love yourself and you love other people, you're not going to allow certain things to happen. And that's the fundamental missing point in this society, I believe. We don't care about ourselves. And when you don't care about yourself, you don't care about others. And then you get into all this mentality from it changes from the rich and the powerful golden rule to today's phrases is get the bag, and I got to get the bag, and I got to have the profit. You got to love mankind. And it's not an esoteric, it's not a hypothetical, it's not a spiritual concept. It's basic. Because if I don't love you, I ain't going to prosper and you ain't going to prosper. And that's the basis of it. And if you look at any times of society where there have been changes in America or throughout the world, that's the foundation. From what happened during he talks about the bones that they threw out for Social Security. Social Security wasn't a bone. This country was on the verge of being destroyed. The World War I vets had occupied the Great Lawn with their M1 rifles, and people weren't standing for it. There were women dying in the streets. There were kids dying up in Rockefeller's coal mines and in the Appalachian Mountains. And people said, listen, this is enough. You know, the song, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime, and all this. All of these things acquiesced what was going on at the time. And people said, look, this is enough. We're not going to have it anymore. And whoever had the money, money can't buy you heaven. You understand what I'm saying? And whoever got the money, if the people just serve and say, look, I care about my fellow man more than I care about your dollar, it'll stop. But that mentality has been taken away. That's one thing that I agree with David. The ruling class is expert on taking away that mentality that I am my brother. I am my brother's keeper. If that mentality started to pervade itself, then you'd see a change, because then the motivation for change would be there. But until that does, until that basic fundamental idea of life is instilled in people again, you're going to never have no change, because everybody's going to be caught up in the idea of self. The great American myth that I pull myself up on my own bootstraps and maintain myself. Everybody in this country, there's two ways you get rich in America. You steal it from somebody or you inherit it. That's it. All these people you see, they didn't pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. The Rockefellers, the Carnegies, the DuPonts, they all had government subsidies. They all profited from land grants. They all profited from loans from the government, corporate welfare. And that's how they got to where they are, even to the Bezoses and the Elon Musk today. That's how they got where they are. They didn't do it on their own. That's the myth that nobody understands. That's the game. You don't do it on your own. You don't do it on. You do it by the support of society. You do it by innovations in government. Then you make your profit. And if you respect that process, then you respect the people that make your profit. And that's what's lost in this country today, my opinion.
So let me ask you, we're running close with time. What accounts for the fact that all these atrocities have occurred repeatedly, and bringing it up to today, the very communities that are hurt most appear to be the least motivated to change the situation?
Because people lose focus. People don't understand the truth or don't understand. The easiest way, the old Chinese proverb, the easiest way out is through the front door. But why do so many people use the window? People don't see the truth. They don't want to understand that, hey, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. They don't want to believe that. They want to believe in this American myth. That's why does Lotto sell out? Why do we have Powerball? Why do we have Mega Millions? Why do people stand online? Because everybody wants to believe in the great American myth, the great I am. They don't want to believe it, bro, because it takes a sacrifice. It takes a self-sacrifice to say, hey, I want to be treated a certain way, so I'm going to treat you a certain way. And sometimes that's not reciprocated, but you have to do it anyway. And it's a hard concept to get. You know, it's like turning the other cheek. It's a hard concept to get. It took me a long time to get it. You know, it's not easy. It's easy as hard as you want it to be. But it's a concept that you got to get. And eventually it comes around. It takes time. But I certainly believe, like Martin Luther King said, the moral arc of the universe is bent towards righteousness.
Well, thank you for your contribution today. We will continue this discussion because it's worth having. And we need to wake people up, not only to the reality of our shared condition, but also to the potential of getting solutions, changing the system, making your own system. But certainly we cannot continue this. We cannot continue to be the object of everybody's plans. And we are continually subjugated with this formula. It's not been working. The system isn't working. Even for them, the system isn't working. So we got to get busy. How do we do that? What do we do? We will continue this conversation. This is important because now everything practically is at crisis level, at crisis stage. Some are beyond crisis. It's in meltdown. We are seeing virtual meltdown in many of our communities. Things just will not work. No matter how hard you try, they will not work because so many parts of it, so many components are all non-functioning, all at the same time. So we have paralysis and we are not able to move forward. We can't move because you need integrated parts to work together to move. And we haven't reached there yet. Thanks for listening today, and we'll talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye.